California, I'd like to call the meeting to order, please, and ask that you join us in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opportunity this morning for public comment. Anything that is not on the agenda, you're welcome to bring to the board. Seeing no one, then we will consider the consent calendar. Does anyone care to pull anything from the consent calendar? If not, Chair will entertain a motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second.
A motion from Supervisor O'Brien, second from Supervisor Chiesa. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We have then under item B4, consideration of a memorandum of understanding by and between the jurisdictions in the Merced to Sacramento region for the purpose of creating a working group to collaborate with California High-Speed Rail Authority. Ms. Mortensen, did you...
Good morning, Chairman Grover. If I could just say a couple of words to frame it, I'll be very brief.
Absolutely. I was just going by what was on the schedule here.
Go
ahead, Mr. Boggs.
Good morning. Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Officer, Economic Development. We are here this morning to seek your approval to join a regional memorandum of understanding, an MOU, with communities, jurisdictions, and regional partners along the State Highway 99 corridor between Merced and Sacramento. The purpose of which is to create a working group that will collaborate with the California High-Speed Rail Authority to assist in the planning and development of a high-speed rail alignment, which will ultimately improve our collective passenger rail transportation systems between all partners in the region. Each of you have listened to this presentation by way of the STANCOG on January 20th, so I won't belabor my comments this morning. At this time, there's no fiscal commitment associated with entering into this working group MOU. Again, the purpose of the vehicle is to continue and expand upon a shared cooperation among the 20 regional partners as identified. And Ms. Stacy Mortensen is here, Executive Director of the San Joaquin Regional Rail Commission. She's been spearheading this collaboration for many months and is here this morning to make a very brief summary statement regarding purpose, importance of the regional process, and to answer any questions you might have. Ms. Mortensen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, members of the working group that have included the three counties, Merced, Stanislaus, four counties, San Joaquin and Sacramento, actually been working together since 2006. And we formed together to look at the viability of regional / commuter rail between our communities and to determine the feasibility. And what we found is that there was general consensus around the 99 corridor and also a railroad corridor who is quite unwilling to let additional passenger service operate on their very precious freight tracks. We found ourselves in a quandary of wanting to pursue this initiative, but then not having an available railroad to work with. When the high-speed rail bond passed, it provided an opportunity for another partner that was looking for a new corridor and perhaps a way to leverage our two efforts together so that we didn't duplicate efforts, we didn't duplicate the expenditure of very scarce resources. So since that time, we found that perhaps aligning our Valley Alliance a little more strongly would do a couple things. One, keep the need for the regional / commuter service on the table so that it didn't get wiped out as the hype and the anticipation of high-speed rail swept through the valley. And then the other is to really position to convey to the High-Speed Rail Authority what the local issues are. There are certain local and regional issues that we know better how to communicate to a statewide initiative, and we're stronger if we communicate that message together. There are issues about farmland. There are issues about water district infrastructure, displacements of different uses in the downtown area. And I think if we stand together on those issues, we have a much better chance of achieving what we'd like to see out of a high speed and a regional rail system, and to try to avoid what we would not like to see in terms of negative impacts. If we wait and we unify after all the marks on the map are done and all the engineering's done and everything's ready to go out to bid, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we're trying to fight against what we don't want. And we think through this memorandum of understanding, the different entities can put together what we do want and convey that early on so that it's incorporated in the lines that are drawn on the map. You see the major statewide map up on the screen. You also see the potential routes that are considered between Merced and Sacramento and the connection with the Altamont line, which is the line in green. As you can tell, there's a very important crossroads that you see with San Joaquin and Stanislaus counties. We think some very early thought, very cohesive thought needs to go into how we make those two routes connect. And we think Modesto, Stanislaus County plays a very important part in that. So we'd urge that you join this memorandum of understanding just to strengthen our position to figure out what the local issues are and to work those across the regional boundaries with your neighbors, and then really work to support the best rail strategy for the Valley that we can going forward.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, please. Leo, go ahead. Stacy, thank you very much for coming down. The MOU, it outlines a few things. One of them is the improvements may be phased in the near term. Is that specifically talking about maybe ACE commuter rail, or are we talking about segments or the project itself from Merced to Sacramento?
It's actually two parts. The Altamont is going to be undertaken as an upgraded, a series of upgrades, probably three that take it from current status today to a fully electrified higher speed corridor, probably in the range of 125 miles an hour. We see another opportunity in the Merced to Sacramento corridor in terms of pushing the authority for early right-of-way acquisition. If they do that, we can, at a much earlier stage, add more conventional rail on the corridor until the phase two high-speed rail system is complete. There are ways to do that where we don't waste any money, where we implement rail as a very progressive upgrade, and each successive upgrade builds upon the past. So we would like to push for very early service between Merced and Sacramento.
Okay, and I had gone to the scoping meeting on the, Mike, help me, on the southern Pacheco Pass. No, Pacheco Pass. And they're talking about the high-speed rail, you know, bridges, tunnels, to keep it up to speed. On the Altamont, are they talking about the same thing for speed? You're talking about 125 miles an hour, or is that keeping it above ground, or have we gotten to that point yet?
Once we get above 110 miles an hour, we'll need to be fully grade separated.
Okay.
There are a series of tunnels for the Altamont. It's very difficult to find a grade that allows the speeds we're talking about. I think our real critical issue is when we get into the downtown areas, what are the speeds that we work with? And I think through the partnership, we're trying to make sure those continue to match the scale of the community development we're trying to support.
Yeah, and I think it's very important that we note, you know, the significance for Stanislaus County is, again, in that connection that you were talking about, the green lines at the base, and making sure Stanislaus County is included in this plan. So thank you very much for coming in, Stacy.
Thank you. Anyone from the audience care to comment on this item? If not, we'll entertain a motion regarding this MOU.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion that we accept the staff recommendations 1 and 2.
Second it, please.
Okay, I have a motion by Supervisor Keza, second by Supervisor Monteith. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries 5-0. It's not yet 9:15 for our scheduled time, so is there a chance we could go to correspondence, please?
This board has received a letter from the Riverside County Supervisor John Tagliani requesting opposition to U.S. Prevention Services Task Force's recommendation to reduce the frequency of mammograms.
Refer this to the Health Services Agency.
This board has received a letter from the Western Center on Law and Poverty regarding Stanislaus County's income eligibility and cost-sharing policies for the medically indigent adults, the MIA program.
Refer to the Health Services Agency and the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from Trimmasters, Inc. regarding their plans to lay off 186 employees beginning on March 31st, 2010 at its facility at 201 South McClure Road in Modesto, California, per the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act.
Refer to the Workforce, excuse me, the Alliance WorkNet, and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the West Stanislaus Resource Conservation District Board of Directors requesting the Board of Supervisors to allow them to replace their annual audit with a biannual audit.
Refer to the Auditor Controller.
This board has received a letter from NI Industries, a TriMass company, regarding their plans to lay off 15 employees on March 30, 2010 and March 31, 2010 at its facility at 5300 Claus Road in Riverbank, California, per the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act.
Once again, refer this to the Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of these claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any board member reports today? Seeing that we don't have any, could we get an executive officer report, please?
Yes, it would be my pleasure. I would first like to note that state budget committees and the legislature are beginning now their work in earnest on the governor's proposal. We should hear more information in the weeks ahead relative to the viability of some of the measures that the governor has proposed. Lieutenant Governor position, Senator Abel Maldonado, will get a confirmation hearing for the Senate Rules Committee sometime this week. We have some positive news on SB 85, which is a negative bailout bill that would provide some short-term benefit to Stanislaus County. The bill did pass out of the Assembly. It's back in the Senate. The bill passed out 71-0 of the Assembly. Senator Dave Cox has pulled the bill back to the Senate Local Government Committee for a hearing, which will occur on February 8th. Would also like to note that the State of the County speech, for those persons who missed it in its initial airing last week, will be replayed on our local government television channels, Comcast 7 and Charter 19. That schedule is Mondays at 9:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m., Tuesdays at 10 p.m., Wednesdays at 3 p.m., Thursdays 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., Friday at 9 a.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. and 5:30 p.m., Sundays 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. You can also find it on the county's website if you want to stream it off the internet. Federal level, Oristimba Creek Flood Control Project, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers held its F4 conference for the Oristimba Project on January 28th. This conference is designed to consider alternative plans to determine if the evaluations are adequate to select a plan for recommendation. This project is moving forward. It has some considerable local, state, and federal support. However, we have not yet identified the considerable funding that will be necessary to successfully bring a project to completion. We made significant progress largely to leadership of Congressman Dennis Cardoza's staff, David Jones sitting in the back of the audience, and district attorney, I think I gave you a promotion here, and Public Works Director Matt Machado, as well as his local supervisor Jim DeMartini, who's been very actively involved in the leadership of this effort. So a great deal of thanks to those persons to move forward a project which at several times over the last 5 or 6 years has been considered a dead on arrival type of a project. It does have life now and has an opportunity to protect the citizens on the Westside communities in and around Newman. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Well done. First time I've ever heard the reading of cable TV time zones in order to fill time.
I made it though. Look at the
perfect.
Clock.
Yeah. Having reached the hour of 9:15, we have a scheduled matter of public hearing to consider the introduction and waiving of the first reading of an ordinance to increase the clerk recorder base recording fee from $4 to $10 per first page. Ms. Landrigan. Morning.
Good morning, Chairman Berber, members of the board, County Council Doring, and CEO Robinson, members of the public. I'm Lee Landrigan, County Clerk, Recorder, and Registrar of Voters. I come to you today with my hat on as a county recorder, not in the position of clerk or registrar of voters, because we are asking to align ourselves with a new upgrade in Government Code 27361A. And that has become effective on January 1, 2010, just this last month. The county recorder base recording fee has not increased in the last 25 years. It has been $4 for the first page of a recorded document since 1985. Recognizing the recorder is based on a fee-for-service type of effect, the legislature updated Government Code 27361A, and effective now, the base fee to introduce the county for recording and indexing the first page of a real property document has increased or will increase from $4 to $10 with this ordinance. Stanislaus fee increases are conducted by ordinance, and I am here to discuss this new state law and the resulting ordinance that would come to Stanislaus County because of it. In Stanislaus, the Office of the Recorder is combined with that, as I indicated, with the county clerk and the Registrar of Voters. However, each of them have a very different purpose. This legislation and resulting ordinance only impact the recorder aspect of the office, for the division which records documents relating to real property and land records. It will not apply, it will not affect any of the functions of the Registrar of Voters Division, which conducts elections, or the clerk recorder, the clerk division, which includes marriage licenses, fictitious business names, and passports. It will also not apply to any copies issued by the office, including official land records, birth, death, marriage certificates. Again, these items will not be affected. The new law only affects the base recording fee for real property documents. Again, Government Code 27361A authorizes the base recording fee not to exceed $10 for recording and indexing the first page, and this is in quotes, to reimburse the county for costs of services rendered. So the County Recorders Association has agreed that all of the 58 counties should conduct and determine the actual cost of recording and indexing process for their counties. So in November and December of 2009, Stanislaus conducted a study to determine the actual cost of performing recording and indexing services. Each of the 58 counties in this process has either in the middle of this process or has already concluded it. Our study has revealed the average weighted cost in Stanislaus to provide a recording and indexing of a land record document is $13.31 per first page. Based on this average, the clerk recorder is recommending an increase in the base recording fee from its existing $4, which was the statewide fee before, to $10 for the first page of the real property document. The fee to record the first page of a real property document consists of a base fee, which we are discussing here today, and four other mandatory ancillary fees in addition to the base fee. The combined amount of these, the base fee and the ancillary fee, would result in the final cost to our public of a move from $8 to $14 for the first page of a recorded real property document. It is anticipated this adjusted fee will result in the recorder being able to meet our current budgeted revenue for the fiscal year 2009-10, which we are currently not able to do, and will produce approximately $40,000 to $60,000 on average per month in revenue, enabling the clerk recorder to meet and maintain existing and recording and indexing mandates, which we are mandated to do. The ordinance implemented by Government Code 27361A, if approved here today, will become effective around March 11, 2010, and the county recorder intends to implement it effective Monday, March 15th. I'm here for answering any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Lundgren. Any questions for me? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And as it's a public hearing, I'm going to open that public hearing and offer opportunity for anyone from the public to comment regarding this item. So we'll close the public hearing then and bring it back to the board for action.
Any
Yeah, motion to approve staff recommendations.
We have a motion from Supervisor DeMartini. Is there a second? Yes. Supervisor Monteith on the second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. And being past 9:20, we will consider that public hearing item. A public hearing item to consider adopting a mitigated negative declaration and mitigation monitoring and a reporting plan for the Fink Road landfill infill project. Ms. Herrigville. Oh, right. There she is.
Good morning, Chairman Gover, members of the board, CEO Robinson, County Council Boring, Sonia Herrigfeld, Director of Environmental Resources. The item before you this morning is to hold a public hearing to consider adopting a mitigated negative declaration and a mitigation and monitoring and reporting plan for the Fink Road landfill infill project. This item is consistent with the board's priority of a well-planned infrastructure system, specifically the goal to promote effective solid waste disposal. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to our infill team, which is Jamie Eggers, the Assistant Director, Michael Yusessens, and Kathy Kingsland from Shaw Environmental.
Good morning. As you know, the Fink Road landfill has operated at its current location since 1973. Initially, it began as an 18-acre site and was later expanded to 219 acres for both Class 3, which is our typical municipal solid waste, and Class 2 waste, which is the ash that results from the waste-to-energy process. Our remaining Class 3 capacity is currently about 13 years, and that's in contrast to the Public Resources Code, which is state law, which requires jurisdiction to maintain at least 15 years of disposal capacity. As you know, the board established a goal to stay on the existing landfill, quote, footprint as long as possible before developing a new landfill. Your strategy for doing this has been twofold. First, to develop additional capacity by utilizing the space that's currently taken up by the site access road that meanders through the property, and also through adding additional vertical airspace. The planning process for this over the past few years has included hiring a consultant in the fall of 2006 to prepare a 100-year site life study. And back in November of 2008, the county retained Shaw Environmental to prepare a revised solid waste facilities permit application, as well as the initial study, which is required by CEQA. And that pretty much brings us to the point where we are today. Stanislaus County is not considered non-compliant because you began the process to rectify the shortfall in disposal capacity well before we reached getting below the actual 15-year requirement. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Shaw Environmental.
Thank you, Jamie. Hi, my name is Michael Yusessens. I'm with Shaw Environmental. I've got a few slides here just to kind of talk about some of the project specifics. Starting with, you'll see from some of the subsequent graphics, the existing access road will have to be relocated outside the existing footprint of the landfill, and that's about a 7-acre addition. Also, the main concept of this, the vertical expansion that Jamie talked about, is basically instead of going out laterally, the landfill will rise vertically, and that's a very efficient way of doing that and creating more airspace because you're basically over a liner system that's already been built and paid for. So you get additional capacity without the capital cost associated with additional liner. The elevation, the currently permitted maximum, you know, if you look at your current permits, it's 385 feet mean sea level. The proposed revised final grading plan would be up to 545 feet. There's some things that this project will not change. We will not change the currently permitted maximum tonnage per day that is allowed into the facility. We will not change the traffic volumes. The number of days the facility is open will remain the same, and the operating areas hours will remain. Also, the types of waste accepted will remain the same as they currently are. We prepared some three-dimensional graphics to try and provide a visual documentation of what some of the proposed changes entail. This first graphic, and this is if it's a little bit up in the air, so it's not as if you were driving south on I-5, from north of the landfill, but it's similar to that perspective. This essentially shows what the landfill looked like last year. This is a March or October, I believe, 2009 topography, and the things to note here are landfill 1 over to the right is a closed landfill. Landfill 2 is the current Class 3 MSW landfill, and in the background is Landfill 3, which is the Class 2 ash landfill from the waste-to-energy plant. You can see the current access road, which is a line, kind of meanders between Landfills 1 and 2. The next graphic shows the currently permitted final cover and final grades, and this is at that maximum elevation that I talked about. And the thing to note here, this was developed, I believe, back in around 1992. So this has been on the books and permitted with this configuration for quite a while. The thing I think that's interesting is that the top of what is currently Landfill 2, we call that the top deck. And if you'll notice on that, it's very flat. And so that from a visual perspective, it would be very dissimilar to the other terrain in that area once it's filled. It almost is kind of an anvil and slopes from the west to the east towards I-5. And in the background, you can see a rendering of what the waste-to-energy plant looks like. Next slide. This depicts the vertical expansion, and again, the height increase up to 545 feet elevation. Note that the access road, that canyon, if you want to call it that, between landfills 1 and 2 has been filled. That will be lined and filled. Also, the visual perspective of the waste-to-energy plant has now been obscured, at least from the north, traveling south. You can also see a little bit on the right-hand side where the new access road will extend out onto the property that the county owns, located to the west. This is the same series of renderings, just from a different perspective. Now we're looking from the southeast towards the landfill, so that Landfill 3 is in the foreground. And this, is just intended to give you kind of a different look. This is what the landfill looked like last year in terms of the grades at that time. The next slide shows what the currently permitted final grades are. And then again, the third slide shows what we're proposing. One thing about this proposed final grades is it is more closely resembles the surrounding terrain. And so that when that was designed and constructed, the intent would be to eliminate as many of the sharp angles as you could so that the terrain would be more rolling, more gentle in nature. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Kathy Kinsman to talk about the CEQA process. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman, Board of Supervisors. As you know, a primary driver behind CEQA is really three separate processes. One is identify potential project impacts, mitigate those impacts to a less than significant level, and the third and a very important component is the public outreach and involvement in the public in that process. To that end, the public involvement segment of this project included informing through the county's own environmental referral process, as well as copies of the proposed initial study mitigated MEGDEC were sent to the state clearinghouse, and the state clearinghouse then sent out copies of the document to all state responsible agencies. In addition, a notice of intent to adopt the mitigated proposed mitigated MEGDEC and a public notice, this is a joint public notice announcing a public meeting to be held, was mailed on September 18, 2009. A copy of the public notice and the A copy of the public notice was also mailed to any residents within a quarter mile of the landfill. And in that notice included information on how the public could access a copy of the mitigated MEGDEC initial study on the county's webpage, and as well as the document was sent to local libraries. The notice provided, of course, under CEQA, a mandatory 30-day comment period, which began the following day after the notice was published. It started on September 19th and ran through October 19th. And then the State Clearinghouse officially closed the comment period on October 20th. I believe it's because there's a furlough day in there, and they added one additional day. Concurrently with that, on September 19th, a copy of the public notice and announcement of the public hearing, a public meeting, was published in the Modesto Bee on September 19th. And then on September 30th at the Patterson Library, a public meeting was held. There were no attendees outside of the county organization and representatives, and Supervisor DeMartini was present at that meeting. In addition, county staff made a presentation to the county's Environmental Review Committee on October 7th during the public comment period. The only mitigation measures, that were requested by any county or outside agencies was from the Office of the Fire Warden. After discussions with them, they subsequently sent a second letter that changed their request for mitigation measures to merely recommendations, because many of the measures that they were addressing really had nothing to do with the landfill, the infill project. It had to do with current operations. In total, 8 letters were received during the 30-day public comment period. 6 of those letters included no specific comments. Many of them indicated that either they felt the project, they concurred with the conclusions of the CEQA document, that there would be no significant impact, or they were simply reaffirming that certain notifications or permit applications were required other than the mitigation measures that were listed in the document. Of the 2 other letters that were received, one, again, was from the fire warden, and the final letter is from the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District. In their letter, they requested that certain mitigation measures specific to construction be included in the project. Now, in the document that was sent out to the public, there were similar measures, but we opted to strike those measures and replace them with these, since they seemed to be more pertinent to exactly what the Air Pollution Control District wanted. They were no less onerous on the county than the previous measures. And those measures primarily required that dust monitoring be conducted during construction, which is a very standard mitigation measure that we see coming from many districts. The vehicle speed be reduced to prevent fugitive dust, and that areas be maintained in a stable condition, restrict vehicle access, and really limit the footprint of construction to exactly what is specified in the CEQA document. We prepared, along with county staff, written responses to all 8 comment letters, and those responses, as well as the letters, are included in your board package. And they're also on the department's webpage, the comment responses. As stated previously, no other state or local agencies offer comment. The mitigated MEGDEC, the proposed mitigated MEGDEC, did include mitigation measures for aesthetics, in addition to the air quality measures for aesthetics and for biological resources, as follows. For aesthetics, it reaffirmed really what the project design is to implement a limited contour grading as part of the final closure to achieve a more natural appearance, the rolling hill that Michael described. In addition, the final cover will be vegetated with a mixture of native grasses to help it blend with the existing surrounding environment as part of the final closure. For biological resources, the two species were at issue. One is the kit fox, and the other was western burrowing owl. To mitigate for any potential impacts to kit fox, no direct impacts are identified. One would be to follow standard construction protocol for that species, which includes conducting a pre-construction survey in accordance with the protocol to simply make sure that there are no kit foxes currently within any area that would be disturbed by the construction. In addition, and this dovetails well with the Air Board's recommendations, is to also have a construction speed limit, on-site speed limit during construction, just and that no construction vehicle equipment be allowed to drive in areas outside the identified construction area, just to make sure that no kit foxes are inadvertently hurt or ran over. In addition, another standard kit fox mitigation is to ensure that no kit foxes are trapped or inadvertently covered, so that steep wall holes or trenches must be covered at the end of each workday. Those trenches have to be inspected prior to the startup of construction each morning. And we, all these mitigation measures, part of the language in the mitigating deck requires that these mitigation measures be incorporated as part of the construction specification so that there's no debate from the contractor as to specifically what is they are required to do during construction. In addition, any construction piping has to be capped just to make sure no animals go in there at night and to lay down or to den. Related to that, food and trash items have to be kept in closed containers, not so we aren't attracting wildlife to the site. The contractor and their crew are not allowed to bring any of their pets. Sometimes contractors do bring their pet dogs. None of that can be brought to the site because they could potentially harass any of those if there's any kit fox in the area. Once the project is completed, all the disturbed areas will be recontoured. Again, this dovetails with the mitigation measure in the aesthetic section. And the area will be revegetated with native grasses. In addition, for the Western Burrowing Owl, a pre-construction survey also has to be conducted prior to the start of the construction to clear the area, make sure there's no burrowing owls nesting. And if in the event of burrowing owl is discovered during construction, there are standard protocols set by Department of Fish and Game for how that is handled, and it primarily requires passive relocation of the individual owl. Although this issue was not raised by the Air Pollution Control District in their comment letter, following close of the public comment period, which was in October, in December, 2 months later, December 17th, the Air Pollution Control District adopted two documents. One is a document on addressing greenhouse gas emission impacts under CEQA, and the other one is guidance for Valley Land Use Agencies in addressing greenhouse gas emission impacts for new projects. Since these documents were adopted during this project, ourselves and county staff looked at those guidance documents very carefully to determine whether or not any additional mitigation measures were warranted within the CEQA document. And we decided that the prudent means to address the issue is through inclusion of language that was already in the mitigated neg deck, but to simply bring that language out as a standalone mitigation measure. And that measure reads that as part of the landfill's existing regulatory obligations to the Air Pollution Control District, Stanislaus County will work with the Air Pollution Control District to determine what, if any, best performance standards may be needed in the future operations to address greenhouse gas, climate change, and they will incorporate that into their operational permit. In summary, no significant impacts were identified during the CEQA process that could not be adequately mitigated. All mitigation measures reduced the impacts to a less than significant level. The initial study concluded that a mitigated neg deck for the project is the appropriate CEQA document, and the lack of comment or the comments that were received support this conclusion by staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, staff recommends that the board adopt the mitigated negative declaration and the mitigation monitoring and reporting plan for the project, and to direct staff to order the filing of a notice of determination with the clerk recorder's office. And we would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, are there questions of staff or the consultants from the board? Supervisor Keza.
I have one question. It looked like, and I'm looking at the rendering, the drawings, it looked like the landfill 1, 2, and 3 end up being commingled in the end. Is that, I know that can't be, but landfill 3 ends up as part of the mountain, right? The ash?
Yeah, yes they do. We're the final configure, both the access road between landfills 1 and 2 as well as the current road between 3 and 2 will be lined and covered.
Do you have some additional life expectancy in landfill 3, the ash landfill? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes,
yes we do.
Over the other one. So how do we keep those separate?
There's a lot of sequencing that will go on as part of this, as this is developed, and certainly any movement of waste onto landfill 3 would come after the waste energy plant is finished and that ash disposal has concluded.
This is a public hearing, so I'm going to open the public hearing, and I have one request to speak, John Mataka.
Good morning, Board. My name is John Mataka. I reside at 8505 Wilson Street, Grayson, California. I'm the current president of the Grayson Neighborhood Council. First of all, I want to go on record as our group being against a negative declaration on this project. I was watching the presentation, and I know part of it is public participation. I see that, you know, everything was done. A meeting was held in Patterson. Neighbors within a quarter of a mile of the landfill were given surveys, and not one single resident showed up at the meeting. Now, we know that this was a huge issue on the west side, not just within a quarter of a mile, but in my community of Grayson and Wesley in the Modesto area, when they were talking about bringing in large quantities of trash and making these huge mountains of garbage. This plant changes, is an expansion in my view. In my humble view, it's an expansion. It's not outward, but it's upward. I don't think that a true community input was taken, although everything the board went through, the procedures that it had to go through, there was no real participation by the community. I know my group, with all the advocating that we did, was not notified of any of this process. Simply, our communities are Spanish speaking. Simply putting an ad in the, covering yourself and putting an ad in the Modesto Bee in English is not sufficient. Not contacting us as a major advocate for that whole issue in the past is I think is wrong. So what I'm requesting is that another meeting be held on the west side and that we be allowed to convene that hearing. The other thing that I'm kind of, curious about is from the presentation, I noticed there's landfill 1, 2, and 3. Two of those are for ash. Now, I know when this controversy started many years ago that there was a grab of over 1,000 acres. So I guess I'm a little confused with if this landfill is at capacity, are we out of that 1,000 acres that we have and you can't extend another cell out there, and that's why you want to go up? Or are we filling all of these cells with ash from Covanta? Because if that's the case, and we don't have the capacity to build another cell, then I really question the fact that we're bringing in waste from Michigan, Arizona, Oregon, Washington, and that's being burned at Covanta, and then the ash is filling up our landfill, and, you know, with out-of-state and out-of-county ash, when it comes time for us to build a landfill or to need space, then we don't have it because we have this ash that has to be buried as a result of burning other counties and other states' trash and other items. So I'm formally requesting that you do not take a negative declaration on this. And another point I want to add is that the San Joaquin Air Pollution District, the green gas issue is a very important issue. I was at a forum just recently about that. I'm very interested to know what their concern is regarding this project. So, I request further time to talk to them and to find out what their issue is as far as green gases and that new mandate that they're working on. So I would ask for a 30-day extension before you make a decision, and that we be allowed to, that our group be allowed to form a meeting in the Patterson community who will be most affected by this expansion, and that we be allowed to do our own outreach to make sure that somebody from the community is there to give their input and to do a little further study on everything that's happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mataka. Ms. Erickfield, do you care to comment on any of those questions?
Yes, I would. First of all, when we did the 100-year study, we did several presentations out in both Patterson and Newman, as well as the Patterson Library. This was prior to starting this CEQA process, and that's when we first vetted the concept of the infill project with the community out there. So in addition to the required public meetings that we had, we also did presentations, you know, before the Patterson City Council as well as the Newman City Council, which were very well attended by both communities when we did those presentations. They were not formally a part of the CEQA process, but it was when we did discuss the idea, and the 100-year study included the proposed infill project between Landfill 1 and Landfill 2. Now, in regards to Landfill 3, which is the ash landfill, currently that landfill has 30 years of capacity as it sits today. We can only burn so much. We can only combust so much garbage through the waste energy plant. So regardless of where that fuel comes from, whether it's a special supplemental waste, which is allowed by Covanta, which is a very, very small fraction of what's burned there, or whether it's our garbage that's delivered there, which is 99 point, you know, whatever. I don't know, have the exact numbers, but it's, you know, the majority of the garbage that's burned there is from our communities, meaning Stanislaus County. I apologize, I just lost my train of thought. We have 30 years of capacity in Landfill 3. There is no ash being disposed of in Landfill 2 or that was disposed of in Landfill 1. All of the ash must reside in Landfill 3. And so this has to do with the disposal of the municipal solid waste, the solid waste that's generated within our community, that this expansion, vertical expansion, has to do with strictly municipal solid waste, which is the garbage that you and I generate on a daily basis. And I think I addressed all of his questions except for the Spanish speaking, which we did not put a notice in. We did not put a notice in the local Spanish newspaper.
Is it still staff's plan and recommendation to not import additional waste to this area?
Absolutely. We to the extent that we can control, which we don't really have control of that, but to the extent that we can control it, no outside waste is allowed to be disposed of either at the waste energy plant or at our landfill. So,
what are the times that you can't control it? What's that circumstance?
That would be Covanta in the existing agreement that we have. They're allowed to have what they call a supplemental waste, and so they contract when law enforcement needs disposal or a company needs guaranteed disposal of a particular item. Guaranteed disposal means total destruction. Covanta is allowed under their existing contract to accept a certain amount of supplemental waste.
And by your documents, that's less than 1%? of what
I would have to go back and review that. It, I don't know the exact percentage of that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
May I just say one thing?
Sure.
Those are typically disposed of in pounds and not tons. So, you know, we typically refer to tons that are delivered, and those items are typically delivered in pounds, you know, not tons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just to kind of put a perspective on that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. And I'll ask Mr. Robinson and Mr. Doring, we have three staff recommendations in front of us. Is it the intent of staff to change any of these recommendations?
I see no reason to change the recommendations before the board at this time.
Yeah, and I would concur with that.
Okay. Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to talk about this project because it is in my district. This is an infill project. This is not a new landfill. In fact, this is just on the footprint of the original landfill site, so it's not really a real expansion the way I see it, although I suppose you could say it is to some extent. But when one cell fills up, you have to start digging a new one, otherwise you're going to be out of business. I was at the September meeting in Patterson. No one from the public showed up for this. There was no comments at all in written comments. It was only from other government agencies that had just some minor comments about either air quality or fire suppression. So I just don't see this one as a very controversial project. I do not see any significant impacts to the area with this. If there were, I would say something. As far as the amount of out-of-town waste that comes in, it's my understanding it's very minimal. I know there are police departments that have contracts with Covanta that need to have police uniforms destroyed, so they don't get in the hands of criminals who will dress themselves up as police officers and commit crimes with them. So that's basically what we're talking about with police departments contracting with Covanta. There is not in this expansion any intention of contracting with other cities in the Bay Area to bring in garbage and medical waste, as the previous boards have done in the past. This was a controversial part of this project years ago, where the county staff was trying to get contracts from Bay Area counties and also from as far south as Tulare to bring garbage into this county. That's not the case here. I don't have any problem with police uniforms, so they have to be destroyed somehow. This is a logical expansion of the landfill. It's 99 9/10 of it is going to be garbage within Stanislaus County. It's not going to be anywhere else, and I just see no problem with it. I was at the meetings in city councils in Patterson and Newman. There was no objection to this. I think the county has been pretty straightforward about what it's going to do with this project, how it's going to look, how the impacts are going to be mitigated, what the impacts are going to be on wildlife, and how it's going to be restored. So I was watching this very carefully, and I have no objection with it. I think everything is in order.
Okay, Mr. Robinson.
I would like to make one additional comment in response to Mr. Mataka's question relative to the 1,000 acres in the existing plan, and that is still in the existing plan, and as I think everybody in the public now knows, we have conducted a 100-year study, and it is the county's intent to judiciously use those lands over the next 100 years for ourselves, for our children and our children's children, to have a landfill that is well managed, that is environmentally friendly, and the outcome of those plans will put San Luis County in one of the best positions of any county in California in handling municipal waste and waste generated within our own communities. It is not now the intent, and has, for the time I have been in San Luis County, the intent to import waste from out of county.
Supervisor O'Brien, did you have a comment? Okay, and the reason I ask is normally your names are lit up when you request. In this case, in that right-hand column, you have the number one, so I don't know if you were indicating something.
Number one.
Okay.
That's one.
Any other board comments? Supervisor DeMartini, do you have a motion for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that we accept the staff recommendations 1 through 3.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second from Supervisor Monteith. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. That concludes our agenda with the exception of closed session. Mr. Dorian, could you outline that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've received a letter from the Western Center on Law and Poverty that was identified in the correspondence section. That letter threatens litigation. Accordingly, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision B, we will hold a closed session conference with legal counsel for significant exposure to litigation. This involves one case. We do not expect any report out.
Thank you. This meeting stands adjourned.